with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Well, hello, hello, hello. Good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. And if you've always had an interest in how others, namely teachers per se, are able to see our potential to bring out the very best of us, then tonight's show is for you. I'll be speaking of quite extensively on that and just what it is about teachers that are able to pull out the best of us because they see something in us. I'm Dr. James Houck, and I thank you for spending this hour with me this evening. And if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about tonight's show, I invite you to visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. That's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And if this subject sparks some memories in you and you would like to call in and just share in the discussion, I invite you to call in the toll-free line, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Well, I hope everybody out there had a very wonderful and safe 4th of July. I have a couple of emergency room doctor friends of mine, and they always cringe when it's their rotation to work the emergency room on the 4th of July, because that is, as they say, the busiest time of the year, not of the month, but for the year. Just when people come in with all kinds of broken bones or other mishaps and things that people want to do when they had too much to drink and they feel like setting off a couple of fireworks. So that's always interesting. So, but I hope everybody just had a wonderful and safe 4th of July. And I think depending on where you are out the states and so forth, they might even have some fireworks even tonight. So. And just in case you cannot spend the entire hour with me this evening, these broadcasts are now podcasting, in case you want to go back and listen again. Or you can go back into the archives and you can just look up other previous shows that might spark an interest for you. And I'll just say that, you know, these shows are now available for download on Audible and Amazon Music. So I am very excited to be with you here today and every other Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And for those of you turning in for the first time, I want to say welcome to the show. Each and every other week, these broadcasts are dedicated to the integration of spirituality and our mental health. And there's a reason why I am very purposeful in this integration. And to a greater degree, I place this kind of integration of our spirituality and our mental health all within the context of relationships. We call it what you will, but it's kind of like the greater backdrop to these discussions. Because as social beings, and you know this as well as I do by now, that it's often within the context of relationships that we can experience tremendous pain and suffering. And these could be anything from acts of betrayal or cruelty that somebody has inflicted against us, or broken, a trust or something, or even what we may have inflicted against somebody else. To simply, you know, at times we're in the wrong place at the wrong time. And unfortunately, many people bear the physical, the psychological, emotional, and even spiritual scars of those wounds. Well, today's broadcast is Wisdom's Lived Experience, If Our Shoes Could Talk. And again, this is very intentional. We're going to be looking at our shoes and just realizing the path that many people choose and how they find wisdom, especially our teachers and gurus out there. And as I'll be talking about in the show, interjectedly a little bit, picking up also from the last broadcast, is just, you know, basically about how we tell our life stories. In other words, we are taught values, morals, lessons, and wisdom, and so on and so forth. And we go through life and we might experience some woundedness and or some triumphs and everything. But we start to tell these experiences in a context of stories. Now, it's also very important for us to understand how we tell these stories or from where we tell these stories. In other words, do we tell these stories from a place of woundedness deep inside of ourselves, or let's say disappointment? And depending on how long we've been carrying around this wound or this brokenness, we might even tell our stories from a deeper place of bitterness. And so as we tell our stories, or as we listen to the stories that are told to us, listen for how the story is being told. That will tell you a lot as to whether or not a person has healed from those memories, because we will always remember what has happened to us, or the things that we have done, you know, with other people and so forth, you know, the facts and figures and you know, the historical narrative. That's always going to be with us. That's, you know, our wonderful long-term memory. But how we tell that story is another matter altogether. And yet, you know, it's kind of ironic that I share each and every broadcast that just as we experience, you know, this kind of woundedness in and through relationships, it's also within the context of healthier relationships that we can certainly find our healing, we can certainly find our voice, and we can certainly reclaim our authenticity. So the difficulty then is often finding the courage to discover that which has always been in you. And I could say it's, you know, as I explain to clients, it's not just the best parts of who we are, but it, in reality, it is who we are at our core level. Okay? And that takes a lot of courage to, you know, be introspective, to look within, to look deep, deep, deep within, and to work through all of our disappointments, our frustrations, our pain, our woundedness, and so forth, and go through a lot of forgiveness. We have to work on forgiving ourselves just as much as forgiving others, and then being able to let those things go, to release those things, as it were, and to take on something better, which is peace and joy and healed relationships and so forth. Okay. So again, that difficulty is often finding the courage to discover that which has always been in you. And as we do that, we're going to come across our gifts. We're going to come across how we've been gifted, how we've been graced, and the skills that we've had, everything that we brought into this world, our uniqueness, let's say, that we've come into the world with, or something that the Scottish Franciscan who lived in the 1300s, John Duns Scotus, he coined the term hachetas, or it's a thisness. And as I explained to kids that I counsel, like everybody has a thisness. So for the, you know, helping them understand, it's like, just look at your thumbprint. That's your thisness. But it goes much deeper than anything external. But it's a nice way to get them thinking of, you know, this is unique to you and your gifts and your strengths and your skills. You know, that's all your thisness and even then some. Because I am indeed a firm believer that we all come into this world with everything we already need for ourselves and for others. See, our gifts are not meant to be hoarded. Our strengths are not meant to be just kept to ourselves and our skills, but we have those skills. We have those strengths. We have that giftedness for the sake of others. Okay? And, you know, as we go through our lives and maybe going through various experiences, we may feel as though we needed to give away parts of ourselves, or if not the whole part of ourselves, or a whole part of that uniqueness or that thisness. And we come to a place in our lives where we don't really know who we are. And perhaps, you know, we felt like we needed to do this because we just simply couldn't live up to somebody else's expectation of us. It was just too difficult. It was too great. It was too taxing. It was too exhausting. Or maybe we hid our uniqueness from others in order to survive an abusive relationships. Or perhaps those aspects of ourselves have been taken away from us, and we just didn't have the strength to fight for those things. We were just simply not strong enough as an 8-year-old, or as a 12-year-old, or as a 4-year-old, or whatever. And doing, as one of my teachers has explained to me, doing your inner child work now that you are older. And either way, when we become aware that we have done these things, you know, it does take tremendous courage to reclaim who we are. Okay? And when this occurs, we soon discover that when it comes to telling our story, we tell these stories from a different place in ourselves. A place of healing, wholeness, and gratitude. Okay, and as I said, you know, we're going to always remember the facts and figures and the historical narrative, but again, listen for how the story is told. And our stories are worth telling because there is freedom, there is resiliency, there is empowerment and wisdom that is shared through our lived experiences. So, how is your heart today? I hope your heart is well. I hope you are well. And I hope that even if you are struggling today, that you will find the rest and comfort and peace that you need. Well, let's begin tonight with a question. How many people out there have ever visited the Holocaust Memorial in Washington, D.C., or the Holocaust Museum in Los Angeles, or even the Museum of Tolerance, which is also located in the outskirts of Los Angeles? Well, over time, I've had the privilege to visit all three museums, and each time I remember the sobering feeling I had in remembering the killing of 6 million plus Jewish people, 2/3 of Europe's Jewish population, and millions of others by the Nazi regime and its collaborators that existed between 1933 and 1945. And now, the United Nations General Assembly, I believe it was back in November of 2005, passed a resolution to mark the 60th anniversary back then of the liberation of the Nazi concentration camps and ended the Holocaust. And there are hundreds and hundreds of Holocaust memorials and museums throughout the world. Well, when I visited the Holocaust Museum, took a tour in Washington, D.C., at the beginning, you are given a passport with a picture of an individual who was once held at one of the concentration camps there in Germany and Poland. And I remember going through three levels of stories, newspaper headlines, and clippings, and pictures, and political speeches, and videos of the inhumane experiments that occurred between 1939 and 1945 in Nazi Germany. And it can be quite emotionally overwhelming. And yet the part that really tied my stomach in knots was when I came to a large room that was filled with mounds and mounds and mounds of shoes of exterminated people. They were piled high on both sides in that room when you walk through, and they had fans there just because to keep the smell down and so forth. And I saw many people stop and stare at those shoes, and they wept because for them it finally hit home. Every pair of shoes was a person. And I remember saying to myself, I wonder what stories these shoes could tell, not just in how, you know, the person who owned them died, but I wonder how did the person live? Well, if you've ever seen the movie Forrest Gump, you'll remember the famous line woven throughout the movie. Mama always said that you can learn a lot about a person just by looking at their shoes, where they're going, where they've been. And then Forrest kicks off the movie when he says, "I've worn lots of shoes." And then that's where the journey begins. And yes, we can learn a lot by looking at the different shoes that we and others have worn over the years. You know, where those shoes have taken us, where those shoes have brought us. What kind of life have we lived so far, and where is our life taking us? Behind every pair of shoes, there is a person. And behind every person, there is a story waiting to be told. And since there's a story waiting to be told, it is worth listening to for the nuggets of wisdom contained in them. And this is something that I truly believe that people throughout the world have forgotten, you know, this wisdom that's contained in the shoes and the stories, as well as those who have taught us along the way. Well, just 2 days ago on Monday, July 3rd, there was an annual celebration of Guru Purnimi. It was held. And now, for those of you who may be unfamiliar with Guru Purnimi, it is an Indian festival dedicated to offering respect to all spiritual and academic gurus. And it's celebrated as a festival in India and Nepal and Bhutan by people of the Hindu faith and Jains and Buddhists. And this festival is traditionally observed to honor one's chosen spiritual teachers or leaders. Now, the custom of Guru Purnimi holds a teacher high enough to remove ignorance from a student's life and transcending them into a higher dimension. Now, it's also a celebration of the knowledge and wisdom that a teacher has and thus imparts and helps students attain enlightenment or moves them further along their path toward enlightenment. And a custom that I really appreciated when I visited India, I saw this up close, that when a student touches the feet or the sandals or the shoes, of a teacher, it is a very high compliment. It signifies that you are blessing the path that this one has chosen to walk for humanity. So Guru Purnimi serves as the ideal time to pay respects to your teachers, regardless of whether or not they're on this earth or they've preceded us by their passing. And teachers in our lives can even extend from our parents to our academic masters to even elder siblings. And the annual celebration of Guru Purnimi is celebrated with great excitement and ceremony throughout the country. And gurus are thought to be extremely important in influencing a person's life by fostering knowledge, morals, and spiritual guidance. And in our lives, teachers and gurus play a significant role. And I have to tell you, you know, I've formal education, you know, I've had it, and I've learned in the formal classroom settings, but I got to tell you, I've learned a lot more outside the classroom from people who did not necessarily have a degree in teaching. You know, the wisdom was there because of how they lived their lives and what was important that they saw in me that they needed to impart to me so that I started to see it in myself. And when I started to see it in myself, I started to see something in others. I started to see other people's potential. And that's what sparked in me. I was like, I want others to know what I have seen myself, because teachers in my life, formal or otherwise, have shared that wisdom with me. And I have to say, for lack of a better phrase, you know, I caught the bug. I caught the bug. So this day is set aside to honor all the spiritual teachers and gurus who have led us on the right path in life. You know, they lead us with their wisdom and life lessons. They teach us from, you know, our mistakes, and they simply help us in living a moral and ethical life. And this auspicious occasion of Guru Purnima honors the gurus who have served as our life's guides of light. Now, the reason I cite this festival, not just because it was 2 days ago, but actually because, as I mentioned earlier, this discovery of what lies within us is basically one of my deep-seated beliefs, that everyone comes into the world already gifted with skills and talents and personality and so forth, in order to discover and cultivate and use for the benefit and betterment of not just ourselves, but also others. And down through history, often the greatest spiritual teachers and gurus are the ones who enable and empower us to discover the potential of what lies within. Because a guru, basically a title typically found in Hinduism, is more than a teacher. You know, traditionally, a guru is a reverential figure to the student, with the guru serving as a counselor, you know, per se, who helps mold the values and shares experiential knowledge as much as, let's say, a literal knowledge and an exemplary life, or being an inspirational source who helps in the spiritual evolution of a student. And a guru is also one's spiritual guide, who helps one to discover the same potentialities that the guru has already realized. And that's important. The guru, the teacher, helps one to discover the same potential that the guru has already realized themselves. Because, you know, whether it's within Western or Eastern cultures, effective teachers, mentors, leaders, down throughout history, have been characterized by those who help pull out of others the very best of themselves. In fact, you know, I have to say in my life, they've helped me to be healed and empowered me to tell my life stories differently, more from a place of healing and wholeness rather than a place of woundedness or pain. And you know, I've sat and I've meditated on this for hours upon hours upon hours. And the reason why effective gurus and teachers are able to do this is because they will not allow others to settle for mediocrity. Even if there's resistance, they're patient, knowing that everybody is on his or her own spiritual journey. In other words, everybody arrives at their truth sooner or later. Well, effective teachers and mentors and leaders empower others to discover greatness in themselves and greatness in others. And effective teachers and mentors and leaders and gurus never, ever, ever, never seek to control others. Instead, they seek to release, to empower, and hope that we have the courage then to embrace that freedom. Great teachers, mentors, leaders, gurus can do this because they themselves have discovered how to live in forgiveness and gratitude and love on a daily basis. But you know, sometimes we find an effective teacher, a mentor, leader, guru, and we often become complacent, believing that all we need to do is just hang around that person and ask for one blessing after another. But come on, folks, let's not kid ourselves. We have our own inner work to do. We have our own spiritual inner work to do in terms of cultivating our own forgiveness and gratitude and love into our daily life. And we do have to listen to our teachers and gurus and mentors and leaders. Not, of course, to what they are saying, but also to their method of imparting that truth and wisdom to us. And oftentimes, the most effective means of teaching come from people who are great storytellers. You know, from plots, analogies, and irony, storytellers have shared ancient wisdom that has ignited powerful transformation in those who have ears to hear, so to speak. And nothing touches our hearts as when a great teacher shares a story, because storytelling is one of the basic and yet most powerful means of imparting truth. Because we take in those stories, we see ourselves in those stories, you know, we take in those stories not necessarily through our ears, but more importantly, we take those stories in through our hearts. And it's those moments that we often feel whereby the moral of the story, shall we say, has reached in, grabbed us by the soul, and has never let go. I had such an experience like that, that was a catalyst for me entering into transforming my own work in intergenerational trauma. Because it all started with a drop of blood. I was visiting a Native American Indian elder, friend and teacher of mine, who noticed that I cut myself on his wooden chair. And in all seriousness, it was a deep splinter from a rough board, but in the end, it turned into a life-changing lesson. Because before I could wipe away the blood from my finger, my teacher reached across, grabbed my hand, and told me, "Take a long look at your blood. What do you see when you look at that blood trickling down your finger?" "I don't know. I don't know what you mean," I replied. "Look more closely at your blood. What do you see?" Again, I replied superficially, O positive? This time his tone softened as he looked directly at me and he said, "Look again at your finger, your blood. Who do you see?" Ah, I was beginning to understand, but I still struggled to put into words what he wanted me to get at. And we sat there in silence for what seemed to be an eternity. And finally, he spoke and he explained, "There is life in your blood, not just your life, but also the lives of your ancestors and all your relations, generations and generations whose DNA and yours are all there in that single drop of blood." Well, I listened to his words, but didn't quite exactly sink in. So like many of my moments of profound insight, the most lasting lessons often begin in the midst of confusion and pain. You know, I'll share with you someday about the scar on my left thumb. And ironically, I, of course, had to get below the surface of my bloody finger and perceive something that I had not been taught or trained or even told to consider up until that point. I mean, my relations, generations, ancestors, just by looking at a single drop of blood? Well, my mind quickly took me back to my high school days when we looked at blood under a microscope. Remember those days in biology class? But since I didn't typically carry a microscope with me, I had to rely on my teacher's years of skilled perception of the soul. "Look again at your blood and tell me, who do you see?" Thinking I understood what he meant, I replied, "Ah, okay, I see my parents, I see my grandparents, my great-grandparents, and my great-great-grandparents." "Is that all?" he asked, pushing me a little bit further, and I said, "Yeah." I replied as I further explained it was as far as I knew about my genealogy. And he, upon hearing that reply, he curled his lip and he raised one eyebrow. And from this expression, I knew I was not fully grasping this lesson. So finally he said to me, "Do you not see the generations of those who have come before you, in whose blood, your blood, carries the DNA of their lives and yours? And this is more than just every characteristic of genes, but can you also see their personalities, their character strengths, their flaws, their struggles, their fears, their triumphs, their joy, and their mistakes? Can you see their souls when they took their very first breath? Can you see them before what we call time, that instant when the Creator dreamt them, and even you? Well, now my head was really spinning, as in that moment I felt like I was in a dream state. But sensing I could handle a little bit more of this revelation, my teacher added, "Once you can see those who have come before you, you will also be able to see those who will come after you, those who are alive but have yet to be born. You are all there in that single drop of blood." And that, ladies and gentlemen, you know, the rest is history. Well, I would really love to hear what's on your heart about this subject, with storytelling and the transformation and so forth. So again, if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I will be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I am your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Welcome back. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you're listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Well, earlier in the show, I was talking about how storytelling and listening to stories go hand in hand. And let's face it, some people are better storytellers than others. I always say that, you know, when it comes to grandparents, you know, grandfathers have their own way of telling stories, a little bit of BS thrown in there, and they embellish and whatnot. But if you really want to know the truth, you talk to grandma. You know, she will not kid you. She will just tell you straight. So, again, listen to how people tell their stories. Some stick to a well-rehearsed script, making sure every little detail is shared. And others are kind of all over the place with their thoughts, leaving out important details and making up others. And then there are some people who have never had the opportunity to share the story of their lives with others. In fact, some people have never been given the chance or the permission to share stories that lie deep within, underneath emotional wounds and scars hidden from the rest of the world. When this occurs, helping people find their narrative powers, let's say, they can also find their healing. Narrative therapy is actually a style of therapy that helps people become the intuitive expert, let's say, in their own lives. Because in narrative therapy, there is an emphasis on our stories that, you know, we develop and carry with us throughout our lives. And narrative therapy is a form of therapy that views people separate from their problems. Now, an example of this would be that, you know, to help a person separate what has happened to them as an individual and his or her interpretations or their assumptions from who they are as a person who has value, dignity, and worth. You see, you might have done some pretty awful things in your life, but does that make you an awful person? No. You're a person who came into this world already equipped and graced with everything you need. But perhaps you've not recognized and embraced your fullest potential. You are a person with value, dignity, and worth, but there are times when you act in ignorance of it. And part of the healing from our past not only involves telling our stories, but also involves reclaiming our empowerment to rewrite our stories that are now more life-empowering and affirming. And we don't do this, you know, we don't achieve this empowerment from, let's say, an embellished, delusional view that nicely ties up stories in a bow. Instead, there's actually three benefits to narrative therapy. The first is to place any untold or any unspoken moments of your life into the current story. In other words, include as much detail as possible, even times or stories or moments or situations or circumstances that you've never talked about before. The second benefit is that this method also helps people connect to their emotional content as they tell and retell their stories more from a head and heart center. And lastly, narrative therapy really helps people construct new perspectives and insights in relation to how they tell their stories. And as I said earlier in the show, this is what makes effective teachers and sages and gurus and leaders is that they know how to enter into another person's life story and become part of it and transform them into embracing who they are and the potential for them to be something they may even have yet to realize. And this is a prominent theme that emerges time and time again when people not only find the power of their voice, but they also listen to the empowerment of others. You see, they too find their voice and are never the same again. It's like the sound of thunder. This is often the case with anyone who has gone through any kind of trauma or event in their life which a person's assumptions have been completely shattered. And, you know, to be quite honest, you know, to find and/or reclaim your voice takes time, but it can be done. You will find your voice. And a key element in finding and claiming and using your voice will have an effect on your brain. Because in the world of science, this phenomenon is called brain plasticity or neuroplasticity. In other words, rewiring the brain. And basically, neuroplasticity allows the neurons or the nerve cells in the brain to compensate for injury or disease, and to adjust their activities in response to new situations or to changes in the environment. So, in other words, I'll put it this way. There is an old saying in neuroscience that neurons that fire together are wired together. In other words, this means that the more you run a neural circuit in your brain, in other words, you connect these neurons, the stronger the circuit becomes. And this is why, to quote another old saying, practice makes perfect. Now, in layman term, it means that the brain can relearn how to process what it sees, what it hears, what it tastes, what it touches, what it smells and speak. And it sends signals to muscles so people can walk again and so forth. And the ability to learn new things enhance your existing cognitive capabilities. And even it helps people recover from strokes and traumatic brain injuries. Now, you know, if you've been listening to me for a while, I am a lover of movies. And so if you've ever seen the movie The King's Speech, this is a movie that came back or came out, I should say, in the 90s, I want to say. You know, it starred Colin Firth and Helen Boehm Carter and Jeffrey Rush. And it's a story, the telling of King George VI. He had a severe speech impediment. In other words, he stuttered. And he actually retrained, with the help of another person, he retrained his brain to control his stuttering problem. And research in this area has also given hope to millions of people. You know, hope to parents of special needs children. And it has demonstrated how we can use speech and language therapy to improve communication and curb behavioral challenges. And musicians can also illustrate, let's say, an experience-dependent neuroplasticity, which, again, means that when you learn to play an instrument, you're involving the left and right brain synchronicity. And music therapy is an excellent way for people to rewire their brain activity, to connect those neurons that weren't firing together. And this is especially true when it comes to reading and playing music at the same time. Left brain, right brain, synchronicity. And another good example of neuroplasticity is learning a new language. That when somebody is learning a new language, the neurons responsible for that language often connect with the sounds of that language and recognizing pictures associated with the language itself. So again, you've seen programs out there, maybe you've used a couple of programs. So let's say if you're a fan of Rosetta Stone or another language program that integrates sights and sounds with prominent nouns and verbs and common phrases, these are often learned more easily than just sound repetition alone. Well, in addition to narrative therapy, another method I use in helping people and tell their stories actually comes from one of my favorite psychotherapists out there, the pioneer of individual psychology, Alfred Adler. And he lived about the same time Freud did, but they, you know, didn't see eye to eye on some things, so they took their toys and they went home. They parted ways, and Adler developed his own theory around just encouraging people to heal from their past and, you know, just where do these stories come from and how we tell our stories and so forth. Because he believed that stories not only provided form to our earliest memories, but also these stories became a blueprint, let's say, for how we live our lives in relation to others. And every time we remember a story from childhood, we must always ask ourselves, okay, as a 3-year-old or as a 4-year-old, I am, and we fill in the blank. And then as a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old, others are, and we fill in the blank. And then as a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old, the world is, fill in the blank. And then as a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old with that earliest memory, therefore, I will fill in the blank. And each time we do this with an early memory, the earliest, or we start to work our way up to present day, we become aware of thought patterns and perspectives that we have attached to, as well as how this attachment affects how we tell a story. Now, granted, we're not going to be able to recall every experience, but for those moments, those times that stand out to us, they serve as our unconscious logic about how we see ourselves and our relationships with others, and the motivation for our behavior today. Well, as I shared in the last broadcast, you know, as a boy, I remember listening to the same family stories at picnics and holidays and other family gatherings. And maybe you had time yesterday at the family picnic on 4th of July to get back in touch with those old familiar family stories. And if you're like me, I heard these accounts so often that by the time I was a teenager, I could recite them word for word. And now, with the benefit of hindsight, I also understand that not only did these details not change, but also the storytellers, their interpretation and attitudes remained the same. In fact, there was always an underlying tone of what I remember of, let's say, helplessness or bitterness or sadness or resentment that drove how the story was being told. And ironically, it was almost as if the story was not being told correctly if these negative emotions were absent. The first thing we need to do is listen to how a story is told. Yes, facts and figures, names and places are important, but what is even more significant is how we tell our stories. Because the words we use are filled with symbols, metaphors, positive, negative, affirming, frightful, whatever they are. They're filled with emotion and powerful images. And in counseling others struggling with intergenerational trauma, I've noticed that when people who have not been able to transform, let's say, the negative energy around their tragic events, their stories are told the same way, each time, every time. But when healing occurs within the greater context of, say, generations and relationships, people tell their stories much differently from a healthier, more holistic perspective. Because the reason why we can tell our stories differently is because much of the healing involves becoming aware of the former negative perceptions and self-talk that no longer serve us. In other words, we get to a point in our lives where we recognize how these cognitive schemas have been draining our energy, how they've been distorting our perceptions, how they've diminished our potential for healthier relationships. In fact, when we replace these with more transformative and life-giving perspectives, the starburst of energy heals all generations across time and space. And yet, it is what happens in the ordinary, shall we say, or allowing room for the extraordinary acts of God in the ordinary, everyday aspects of our lives. And this gives heed for us to pay attention, to have this awareness, to have this understanding. And when we discover these unhealthy perspectives and attachments, we can perhaps also discover the root causes of our unforgiveness, our emotional pain, our bitterness and woundedness. And this is exactly where the inner work of unforgiveness, ingratitude, and bitterness needs to begin. Now, when we begin to heal, as I said, our stories are now told from a healthier perspective, a place from one's inner peace and wholeness. So think about your own stories for a minute. Think about, how do I tell my stories? Think about to whom you tell those stories. Think about the people who have caused you pain and disappointment, misery and heartbreak. And as you tell your story, listen to the tone that you use when you tell your story. And has anything changed from when you first started telling that story? What if you told your story differently? What would change? I mean, obviously, we cannot go back and rewrite history, but what if we could change how we tell the story by inserting a different perspective or wish? What would happen if, in thinking about the people in our stories, we would see them as wounded as well? What if we're able to see that instead of wishing them pain, that we realize that they must have had pain instead in themselves? What if instead we wish them healing? because this is what they really need. How then would you tell your story? I imagine you'd be telling your story from a more intuitive place within yourself that has now been awakened and blessed by its own taste of transformative grace. You remember what it was like when you were younger and our mother or father or another person read to us a story. We sat there listening intently to the words and allowing the stories to form mental images, and we could see the colors and almost hear the sounds and the fantasies in our minds. And in fact, I mean, how often did we sit on the edge of our seats and in some cases laid back in our beds in anticipation for what would come next, only to be told, we're going to save that for tomorrow night. Well, storytelling and listening to stories are not just for the young. Because as a mental health clinician, pastoral professional, storytelling and listening to stories go hand in hand. When we give people permission to share their stories in ways in which they've never been able to share their stories before, transformative, wonderful things happen. Helping people find their narrative empowers them to also find their healing. Now, my long-term teacher recently shared with me a story, a topic, a lesson, of course, that contains much wisdom, grace, and love regarding our ever-evolving consciousness. And Reverend Sally Perry, also known as Swami Satchidanand, she teaches 4 A's to self-realization. And quite simple, but we spend the rest of our lives living these out. Okay, or in other words, there's awareness, acknowledge, accept, and allow. And these 4 A's really can open up our eyes, our hearts, and bring us into a full realization of who we are, because they're very thorough. So let's say, for example, when we incorporate awareness, which is when we begin to realize how aware we are. Her example that she often would give me is like, well, when did you become aware as a child? In other words, go back to your earliest time, again, earliest memories, when you became aware of something that others were not aware of that you knew. So for me, I told her, I said, I became aware of God's love for me when I was around 6 years old. Now, I've heard of God's love for humanity and the gospel stories and what the church, grew up in the church, but at age 6, I experienced God's love for me. And that which I experienced, I became aware of. And with that, started me on this journey, because I went from then acknowledging what I had been taught and then acceptance of letting go of some things that no longer connected with me as I got older and taking on new thoughts, new morals and values, ones that were more in line with who I am. Somewhere in like the early 20s, which is typical in developmental psychology. You know, it's a kind of a detachment that occurs when we examine who we are and how we've been raised and what values we want to keep, as I said, what values we want to discard, what new values we want to embrace. And finally, there is allow, or an allowance. And at this stage, it's about accepting ourself as filled with value, dignity, and worth. And we start to recognize our own presence. As I've shared with students, those whom I have counseled, those whom I have supervised, those who I have trained to go on to be mental health therapists, I would always say to them, when you're in the room with a client or a family, never, ever underestimate the value of your presence. Don't be so consumed with what you think you have to say in the moment, but just be. Allow. We recognize the value of our presence in relationships, because when we elevate our consciousness and we allow ourselves to be who we truly are, we also realize what we have always been. There is no birth, there is no death. We are simply eternal souls. And we begin this realization that everything we think, do, and say accordingly. And there it is, an awareness that put me on a path to self-discovery and self-realization. And what began as awareness has thus moved me along to acknowledge, accept, and eventually allow this truth to forever elevate my consciousness to be who I truly am and what I have always been. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you've been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Thank you again for spending this hour with me. Tune in 2 weeks from now, same Wednesday, later on in the month of July at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, for another interesting topic. So again, I invite you to go back through to the website and leave me your comments about tonight's broadcast, or if you want to go and listen to other podcast, invite you to do that as well. So in the meantime, everybody be safe out there. Everybody behave themselves and start with your awareness.
For an answer or just to leave 1,000 comments or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander on over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Friday at noon Pacific Time on PBS Radio TV.